You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
6 years after the financial crisis and subsequent recession, many nations' economies remain weak, and some of the basic assumptions of capitalism are getting an examination they haven't received in decades. Some criticize the prolonged rapid growth in inequality, but others say that this is a temporary instability, a natural consequence of the Great Recession. In his new book, The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism, Jeremy Rifkin offers a different view of what's happening in capitalist economies. His book is published by Palgrave Macmillan, and I'm very pleased it has brought Jeremy Rifkin back to our show. Hello.
Always nice to be with you.
You argue that there's an emerging paradox in capitalism. What's the paradox?
The paradox is simply deeply embedded in the heart of the capitalist system, really previously undisclosed, but this paradox has allowed capitalism to have tremendous success over the last two centuries. And the irony is it's the very success of this paradox that's now leading to its demise and the emergence of a new economic system on the world scene.
Well, if there really is this kind of contradiction in capitalism, is it going to lead to its demise, or is capitalism just evolving as it has in the past?
I think it's leading. What we're beginning to see is just the very glimpse of an outline of a new economic system emerging on the world stage. It's called the Collaborative Commons. And this is the first new economic system really since the advent of capitalism and socialism in the early 19th century. So from an historical point of view, it's a big development. And the trigger for this emergence of a new economic system is zero marginal cost.
Well, we'll get to that for a second, but how is this all that different from the different varieties of capitalism that are emerging in countries like China and elsewhere?
It's quite different. Even in the short run, this new collaborative commons is flourishing alongside the capitalist market. Sometimes each benefit the other so that they can benefit themselves. But increasingly, it's also an adversarial system, because the collaborative commons takes us beyond the exchange economy to a shareable economy and beyond profit margins to cooperating in a world where we share nearly free goods and services. So it's substantially, significantly different than anything we've known in our lifetime.
You mentioned marginal cost. That's a term in economics. What does it mean?
Well, marginal costs are the cost of producing an additional unit of a good or service after your fixed costs have been absorbed. Now, business people have always welcomed the reduction of marginal cost, and this is what gets to the paradox. The paradox here is that in the capitalist market, sellers are always searching for new technologies that can increase their productivity, reduce their marginal costs, so they can put out cheaper products, win over consumers, and secure profits for their investors. However, business people and economists never imagine the possibility of a technological transformation that could reduce those marginal costs to near zero, which would make the products potentially free, priceless, and beyond the market. That's really what's begun to happen in the last 10 years. Now we're beginning to see the evidence of it.
Well, you say potentially free, but I don't see prices going down all that much. And some things are becoming more expensive at a rate faster than inflation. Rents in New York City, for example.
Absolutely. Let me explain where it is going down and then where I think it's going to go, because obviously this isn't going to affect food prices, for example, and things of that nature, but it's going to dramatically affect energy, products, et cetera. But
food prices are already pretty low in comparison to other things that we buy.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look at the last 10 years. We first saw the inkling of this zero marginal cost about 10 years ago on the Internet when consumers became prosumers and began to produce their own entertainment, their own information, their own knowledge, their own news, their own blogs, and began sharing it with each other, millions of people, bypassing the capitalist market altogether. Now, you know, as a person in the news business, this devastated the newspaper industry, the magazine industries. Many of the newspapers and magazines, including here in New York, went out of business because they could not compete with near zero marginal cost news. Then it went on to the publishing industry, which I'm involved with, and e-books and free e-books have decimated our industry as well. Now, what economists have been saying up to now is, all right, information goods, they're moving to near zero marginal cost on the Internet. People are producing and sharing it. But there's a firewall here. this zero marginal cost phenomenon is not going to breach that firewall and move to the physical world of brick and mortar goods and services. That's now changed, and that's what's new.
Well, aren't there things where the cost can't be reduced to zero because some components cost, like copper in circuitry, can't be reduced all that much?
There are some, but there are others where, and we can talk about this, that are really reducing fast. What's happened here is that the Internet, which reduced our marginal cost to near zero, it's never zero, for information goods, is now expanding to something called the Internet of Things. This is an expanded Internet. It's just started to happen in the last 24 months.
This is not a phrase you've invented.
No. This is well known in the industry, but not in the public yet. And so what we're beginning to see here is this expanded Internet, where the communication Internet, which we all grew up on, is now converging with a very nascent energy Internet and a fledgling logistics Internet to create one platform. It's like a distributed brain. And sensors are now being connected to these three Internets in one. So we have 15 billion sensors out there now connecting resource flows, factories, offices, vehicles, buildings. We're connecting all the devices to us, not just information. So what this allows us to do is continually see data fed into this system. And here's what it means for everyone listening. If you're a prosumer, you go up on the regular Internet, and now the more expansive Internet of Things, and with your mobile and your apps, you can use that big data coming across the entire economy for your own ends, and you can use analytics and your own algorithms programmed into your apps, just like Google does, to produce your own goods and services with a dramatic decrease in marginal cost. And I can give you two examples, renewable energy and 3D printing, which are occurring right now in the real world.
But hasn't the capitalist drive for profit been behind many technological innovations? In fact, 3D printing. I'm going to still have to buy that 3D printer.
Well, let's take a look at the two big areas, and that is energy and manufacturing products. All right? Energy. We now have, in the last 7 years, millions and millions of people all over the world that are producing their own green electricity with solar panels and wind turbines, producer co-ops, small consumer co-ops, millions of people. And although the technology for harvesting these energies is still pricey, it's coming down. As you know, I'm sure you've done many shows on this, there's an exponential curve in solar and wind harvesting technologies, just like computer chips. So it used to cost $66 a watt to produce solar. It's 66 cents a watt now, 40 years later. And it's going to go down, 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 just like computing. But here's the key. For all the millions of people that have installed solar and wind, the moment they actually begin to generate the energy, it's near zero marginal cost because the sun is free, the wind is free, the heat under your ground is free. So for millions of people, they're already producing their own green electricity, especially in Europe where I do my work, and they're doing it at near zero marginal cost. It's created havoc in the traditional power and utility industry.
My guest is Jeremy Rifkin, his latest book, The Zero Marginal Cost Society. Well, how have the major electricity producers responded to individuals producing their own energy?
Well, you know, I work with the European Union. I can help them develop their economic plan here. It's called a Third Industrial Revolution five-pillar plan. Let me give you Germany. And I've worked with the chancellor personally since she's come into office.
Well, Germany was always a leader in solar energy.
Yeah.
Even though it has, as I understand, some of the least sunshine of any country, it does have the least in all of Europe.
But it has the most solar and has a huge amount of wind since the chancellor came into office, Chancellor Merkel. In Germany, we're at 25% green electricity at near zero marginal cost. We're heading to 35% green electricity by 2020. And the big power companies have all but announced in the last few years they're out of the business of generating power. E.ON, the giant utility company, one of their board of directors this week in the news said, well, all the new energy coming in is from millions of small players, and it's well over half the energy. And we, the big power companies, are producing less than 7% and going down, down, down. So he says we cannot compete with near zero marginal cost energy. So this is not academic. The leading industrial country in the world, we are heading to an era right now where people are producing and sharing on an energy internet at near zero marginal cost.
Do you foresee a drive for profit diminishing?
Absolutely, because as you know, profits, you do well with profits when you diminish your marginal costs until they get towards zero. because when you get almost towards zero, there's not enough margin left to mark up and get the profit. So you have to move to an economic system that's beyond profits to manage the activity.
But will people continue to innovate without the profit motive?
This is a good question, because economists will come back and say, well, wait a minute, you're not going to have innovations in a world where people are producing and sharing virtual goods and economic goods at near zero marginal cost. Where's the incentive? What's interesting, when you take a look at the last 15, 20 years since the World Wide Web has come online, and now we have the Internet of Things, millions of people have been very inventive, entrepreneurial, without having to be recompensed for it. When you take a look at all the new software that's been invented and the new approaches to entertainment and information and knowledge, we've had a surge of inventive creativity on the web, with people not being compensated because they did it for the sheer joy of being engaged with each other. And that surge has at least equaled the inventive creativity of a market incentive economy. So I think we can make a good case for it.
Are you suggesting that we're going to start seeing movies that don't cost $100 million to make?
We are. I mean, if you take a look at all of the videos that are up there on YouTube, there's millions of them, and people are being able to produce with digital technology very cheaply, very high quality. Feature.
But the ones that bring people into the movie theaters are still the ones that cost a lot of money and have a lot of car
and that's not
chases and a lot of explosions.
That's not going to
And
go
a lot
away.
Of stars as well.
That's going to be here. I want to make the point that the capitalist system is going to be here for a long time. But I think it's going to play a powerful, more and more of a niche role as an aggregator of network services and solutions. But by mid-century, you're going to have two systems, capitalist market, collaborative commons. They'll work with each other. They'll be a little adversarial. But I suspect the collaborative commons will dominate by mid-century because you can't beat nearly free.
Well, if so many prices are dropping consistently, wouldn't we see deflation and the economic impacts of deflation?
Yeah, we're beginning to see that. Let me preface it with an example and then talk about the deflation, because I think we're seeing that. Let's take 3D printing. Now, we've got now thousands of hobbyists, and we've got lots of small and medium-sized enterprises that are printing out physical products at near zero marginal cost. You can go up on the expanded Internet, the Internet of Things. You have free software. You download it. You buy a printer for $1,000 or $1,200. You use recycled feedstock, recycled plastic, recycled paper. It costs almost nothing. You're powering your 3D printer, at least in Europe now, in Germany sometimes, with energy from the energy internet coming from the local cooperatives at near zero marginal cost energy, and you're transporting it now in some communities, that 3D printed product to market, in a vehicle that's electric or fuel cell powered by very cheap, low marginal cost energy. So it's only at the beginning. This is not mature yet, but it suggests the road we're headed on in terms of energy and physical products, certainly not food and things like that.
Well, how will people earn the money that they need for the things that do still cost money? Are you suggesting we're going to move into a barter society?
No, but what we are beginning to see, you know, generally when this discussion comes up in business circles, I hear, well, look, there's only two ways to manage an economy, either the government, the private enterprise system, or a combination of the both, socialism, capitalism, or social market economy. What we've given short shift to is there's another sector we rely on every day to provide us with a whole array of goods and services that government and private enterprise do not provide us with, and that is the social commons, the not-for-profit sector, the civil society. It's made up of millions of small and large formal and informal organizations providing education and healthcare services and daycare centers and sports and arts and culture and environmental issues. And it's a big sector, but economists don't pay much attention to it because it doesn't create finance capital. It creates social capital. But in terms of revenue, it's worth $2.2 trillion in 40 countries, and it's over 5% of the GDP of the U.S., and it's growing faster than the private enterprise system in most industrial countries today.
My guess is Jeremy Rifkin, whose latest book is The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism. It is published by Palgrave Macmillan. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Jeremy Rifkin. His latest book, The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism, published by Palgrave Macmillan. So you've been talking about the collaborative commons. You mentioned that the term collaborative was rarely used in English until just a few decades ago. Is there any reason to believe that anything has changed beyond patterns of usage?
Yes, absolutely. And that's because this internet has allowed millions, then hundreds of millions, and now 40% of the human race to engage with each other directly. And we've democratized communication, and people are collaborating in all sorts of different ways, social collaborations, cultural collaborations, economic collaborations. You know, one of the things that's always asked is if you have an economy where you can produce and share lots of goods and services nearly free and energy and everything else, so how would you organize it? This is what the collaborative commons is all about that's emerging. Right now, there are listeners here to your show. They're already on the collaborative commons. They're sharing their music and they're sharing their information and news. And now
you're talking about the cloud?
Yeah. And they're sharing their energy, though. There's already people out here in New York producing their own energy. We're beginning to share 3D printed products, and we're sharing all sorts of other things. We're sharing cars with car sharing services. We're sharing clothes with places like ThreadUs. We're sharing our apartments in New York with Airbnb and Couchsurfing and bypassing the high markups of the traditional hotels. So what we're beginning to see is a sharing economy on a collaborative commons. Part of it's in the market. Part of it's beyond the market.
Well, is there a distinction between collaboration and cooperation or bipartisanship?
I think collaboration is what you do on a shareable economy. Exchange is what you do on a market-based economy. Collaboration requires a different form of economic engagement. The young kids around the country, the millennial generation, they call themselves social entrepreneurs. I would have thought that was an oxymoron when I was a young person. But they understand that the new entrepreneurialism requires that they think differently than Adam Smith. Adam Smith said each person is an autonomous agent that pursues their own self-interest, independent of anybody else's interest. But by doing so, you promote the common good. We have a younger generation on the collaborative commons who believes that their own self-interest is best promoted by benefiting the value of the rest of the network they're in, and they believe that their entrepreneurial skills depend on being deeply embedded in cooperative, collaborative networks. There's a whole generation of millennials doing that right now, very different than the baby boomers.
Well, New York City has made noises about clamping down on things like Airbnb. Does that suggest a resistance to the collaborative economy that you have in mind?
There's going to be an accommodation. Just this week, Airbnb just announced this week that they made an arrangement with the city of San Francisco to begin to pay taxes for the use of those apartments and homes to be good neighbors in that city. We're going to see a lot more of these accommodations as these two often competing economic systems begin to rival each other.
Are there industries that are clearly facing dropping prices? I'm thinking about what happened decades ago when economists predicted a problem for AT&T because the cost of a call would fall to zero in the future. AT&T had problems, but isn't phone service now more expensive for most Americans?
Not for everybody that's on the internet Skyping and using free service everywhere around the world. And as millennials,
I can't Skype when I'm out in the middle of the street and I have to call home and say I'll be home a little late.
No, but guess what? The Federal Communication Commission, I have this in the book, they've just put out a proposal for free Wi-Fi for everyone in America, and that is they're looking to buy back some of the spectrum that's now owned by telecom, cable companies, network companies, and then use that spectrum so that every person in America, no matter where you are, inside office buildings and enclosures, can have free Wi-Fi, which would bring this communication near zero marginal cost and allow you to do a lot more things than we're doing now.
Well, usually when I check Wi-Fi, I see that there's a lock on. So I'm not getting it free in most places. But what role does government have in all of this? Copyright and intellectual property protections are government policies, and a significant part of the internet backbone is still government provided.
We're beginning to see a struggle unfold between investor capitalists and the commoners who want a collaborative commons at near zero marginal cost. And the conflict is around something called network neutrality. The basic architecture of the internet and the Internet of Things is the assumption is network neutrality, that any one of us can pay a service provider a small fee monthly, and then we can go up on the internet and now the Internet of Things, and we're treated like everyone else. No discrimination. We're not put at the back of the line. Our data is handled without discrimination. Now, in the last several months, the telecom and cable companies are saying, wait a minute, we own the pipes. We think we should be able to discriminate and charge different prices and even control some of the data. And so now the U.S. Court of Appeals a few months ago overrode network neutrality, the FCC, Federal Communication Commission mandate, saying this is beyond your mandate. So it's forcing the Federal Communication Commission to go back to the table, rewrite their protocols because they do not want to weaken network neutrality. But now the big Internet companies are starting to look like global monopolies. So we've got companies we love, Google, Facebook, Twitter. They've helped provide this social commons. But on the other hand, they've attempted to seclude all the data we put into their websites so they can use it for third parties for commercial advantage. And these are looking like monopolies much bigger than we faced in the 20th century. Google is 67% of the research engine market, and there are 8 billion queries on Google a day, including mine. And their revenues are $50 billion. Facebook has one out of every six people on Facebook on the planet with revenues of $8 billion. Twitter and eBay and Amazon, it goes on and on. So we want the value of these companies. They provided a social commons. But increasingly, we're starting to see a discussion in the courts and government. Should we be treating these as global social utilities that need to be regulated in some way so we can get all the advantages out of them, but they don't seclude our data and use it for commercial ends, so we have the 1% and the 99% all over again in this new era.
And then, of course, we have concerns about privacy in general and the metadata. And now, of course, the NSA has been a big issue in the news for a long time.
So. We do. And, you know, right now there's 13 billion sensors on this Internet of Things. There's going to be 30 billion sensors connecting everything and everyone by 2020 and 100 trillion sensors connecting every device by 2030. The good news on it is it allows us, hundreds of millions of us, to democratize the economy, bypass these big vertical organization companies, and create economies of scale by directly engaging each other and not having to go through these companies. The downside, we're going to have to really be careful about data security. Europe's ahead of us in protecting data security. We are far behind on this. And if we don't protect privacy, we're not going to get the benefits of this zero marginal cost world. There's going to be huge conflict.
My guest is Jeremy Rifkin. His latest book, The Zero Marginal Cost Society, it's published by Palgrave Macmillan. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, I'm thinking about other aspects of the of communications. In his new book, Flash Boys, Michael Lewis alleges that the stock market is rigged by a group of high-frequency traders, stock exchanges, and Wall Street firms, and that drives up prices.
That's why the Internet of Things is so interesting, because it favors the social commons. And that's why there's going to be a dramatic attempt by companies to try to enclose this new Internet of Things. But, you know, I don't think it's going to succeed. If you take a look at the entertainment industry, they tried to stop file sharing and music. They couldn't do it. The newspapers and magazines did whatever they could to try to thwart millions of people at near zero marginal cost creating their own blogs and news and information. They couldn't do it. The technology is too beneficial, and the ability to move it out into society is too expansive. And I think the companies are going to try, but just as the information companies, newspapers, publishing, entertainment couldn't do it, I don't think the big global companies involved in physical things are going to be able to stop it either.
What do you see happening to labor in general or work for the average person in a zero marginal cost economy?
It's right up at top is the top issue. You remember I wrote that book, The End of Work, back in 1995, saying this was coming. We now have workerless factories. We have virtual retailing. We're eliminating blue-collar, white-collar service industries. We have offices that are run on algorithms and analytics. And we're now beginning to replace knowledge workers as well with these new pattern recognition systems. So we're seeing the ability to reduce the marginal cost of labor in the production of products to near zero. So the question is, how are they gainfully employed?
There's still going to be some jobs that humans have to do but they don't want to do. And in a world where people needn't work as much, won't the price to lure people into those jobs skyrocket?
I think that we're even finding, look at knowledge skills. They say, well, at least if you have a knowledge job, you're safe. But we're now seeing a reduction in labor for lawyers and for radiologists and for accountants because we now have analytics and algorithms that can absolutely replace them at near zero marginal cost. There will be some unskilled labor, but even look at truck drivers, bus drivers. We're going to have driverless vehicles on the roads within 5 to 10 years everywhere. So the question is, how do people become employed? And there are alternatives right now. To begin with, I think there's one mass surge of wage labor left, and that's to build out this Internet of Things. It's going to require hundreds of millions of jobs, 30-year build-out of the infrastructure. We're going to have to transform the energy grid from fossil fuels and nuclear to renewables, very labor-intensive. We're going to have to put in an energy and a transport logistics internet. That's a lot of infrastructure development, a lot of jobs. So I think we got 30 years of that, but in the long run, these systems are smart. They're going to run themselves with small supervisory forces. So I think most of the employment we're already seeing is migrating already to the nonprofit sector, the social commons. It's 10% of our GDP. It's 10% of our employment now in the U.S. It's going to go up, 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 while employment in the market sector is going to go down, down, down.
Well, executives at firms like General Motors or Goldman Sachs might want to reduce their labor forces and boost profits, but they're not going to want to eliminate their own jobs. And we are now in a situation where the income gap in this country has just a small group of people earning more money than everyone else. So won't that prevent everything you're talking about?
No. What it's doing is it's creating a mass migration. You have to think of the marketplace as something that's going to get smaller and smaller. It'll play a powerful niche role. It won't create a lot of jobs. You're going to see more and more activity move to the collaborative commons, and the proof is employment. Right now, in the last 15 years, employment has been increasing in the social commons, the not-for-profit sector, and it's been decreasing in the private market.
But can the social commons sustain a workforce of 150 or more people?
Absolutely.
150 million, I mean.
Absolutely. And the reason is this. People say to me, well, wait a minute. How can you create jobs in the nonprofit sector? It's a parasite. It relies on government grants, private philanthropy. That's a misnomer. A study has been done by Johns Hopkins University of 40 countries, and what we find is that over 50% of the income in nonprofit social commons organizations, over 50% of that income is revenue for services rendered, and it's going up. So it's not parasitic on government and corporate philanthropy. And here's the thing. It's somewhat immune to the technology displacement because on the social commons, you have to have humans engaged with humans. You're creating social capital. It's not machines that can do that work.
Well, you mentioned John Maynard Keynes' 1930 prediction that because of greater productivity and prosperity, people would be free to work less in the future. It hasn't turned out that way. A lot of predictions prove to be wrong. While we're surprised by what does change, like smartphones suddenly come along, or we have WikiLeaks, Edward Snowden. Is it really possible to make broad predictions about how economies will evolve?
Well, I did in 1995. I wrote The End of Work, and I said that this was coming in terms of the software, the technology, the robotics. It was controversial at the time. I made projections, and I noticed a whole string of books in this last year have credited that book, said it was right. The economists acknowledge that I got it right 20 years ago, almost to the mark. So it isn't that some predictions are right, some are wrong. I've been wrong sometimes. But when it comes to the economics of this transition, think about it this way. Who would have imagined in 1990, when the web came on, that 24 years later, 40% of the human race would be sharing information, entertainment, video, news at near zero marginal cost for nearly free? Now, what I'm saying is, as we go to this more expansive Internet of Things, we can now do in the physical world what we did in the virtual world. And in 20 years from now, I have no doubt, unless we're derailed, that we're going to be able to produce our energy. We're already doing it in Germany at near zero marginal cost, and increasing amount of our 3D printed products, not our food, not our other things. But the trajectory is there because we already see the trend lines. It's not fantasy.
Well, what will happen as advanced industrial societies evolve, as you describe, but poorer countries lag behind?
What we're seeing in the layout of this third industrial revolution is that the developing countries can move quicker. And we didn't see this before. Cell phones caught us by surprise in Africa and rural India. We thought, well, why would they do it? They don't even have electricity. They put in the cell phones, then the cell towers came. So what we realize now in developing countries is their liability is their asset, meaning they have no infrastructure. It's like, do you renovate an old home or build a new one? It's cheaper and quicker to build a new one. So right now in rural India and in sub-Saharan Africa, they're setting up energy internets in rural areas very cheaply. People are doing it on their own with startup businesses, and they're beginning to connect into this Internet of Things, and they're beginning to create fab labs for 3D printers in small rural communities in Africa and India, where they're creating their own 3D printed products, and they're powering their little factories with their own green electricity. That's happening right now on the ground.
Well, could environmental and related problems derail this transition? There is still a lot of resistance, as we see in the U.S. Congress and elsewhere. And inequality is another problem getting a lot of attention. It existed long before capitalism. But if capitalism is eclipsed, will inequality still persist?
I think there are two wild cards here that could derail all of what I'm talking about. And I end up the zero marginal cost society with this because I think we need to address it. One is climate change. The other is cyber terrorism on a global scale. Climate change is the elephant in the room. As you know, I've been engaged with this for 40 years. And it's affecting agriculture and our water cycle. What people don't realize is climate change increases the precipitation into the atmosphere and throws off the water cycle. More bitter snows, more spring floods, more summer droughts. Our ecosystems are being stressed to collapse. And just this week, the UN climate panel issued its report saying, can we feed ourselves? So I think if we can't address climate change and can't feed ourselves, the ability to be able to produce our own products is going to be nil. Now, the Internet of Things allows us to move quickly to renewable energies and hopefully mitigate climate change.
Well, on top of that, a forthcoming study from the National Socio-Environmental Synthesis Center argues that either inequality or ecological strain can lead to economic and social collapse.
I read that report. I agree with that. So that's why I wrote this book, because I think that there is a new potential journey here. This shift to a Internet of Things and a collaborative commons could move us to a circular economy where we use less resources more efficiently, we recycle them and redistribute them, we go to renewable energies at near zero marginal cost and create a more sustainable world. It's going to be a difficult journey. I'm not sure we'll make it, but the alternative is to stay in the 20th century, if you will, with the kind of energies and technologies that are taking us to the end of the line for the human race. That's not a good alternative.
We're pretty much out of time, but I'm going to ask a question that a listener has called in. If there's zero marginal cost for movies, who will pay the artists, the directors, and the producers?
What we're going to increasingly see is that people on a shareable commons are going to be working with each other. There will be fees for services. A lot of the entertainment industry is going to head for the nonprofit sector. They're going to produce in cooperatives. You know, people say, how do you live in a world without profits? My God, cooperatives are massive. There are millions and millions of people who live in housing cooperatives. They have electricity cooperatives. They have food cooperatives. They have product cooperatives.
They all pay money in those.
Yes, but they're not profit-oriented. They're oriented so that everyone shares together, but you don't have a profit. And literally, a huge percentage of the human race are involved in cooperatives. So when people say, how can you run an economy without a profit-oriented capitalist system, wake-up call, we're already doing that around the world.
Well, some people might see that as a bit idealistic for Hollywood, but we will see. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Always a pleasure.
Jeremy
to be
Rifkin,
here. Thanks for having
me. Whose bestsellers include The Third Industrial Revolution, this one, The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism, published by Palgrave Macmillan.
Thank you.